At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Streaming live from Taos, New Mexico.
Here is Dr. Jay Allen on Safety FM.
Broadcasting live from the Safety FM studios in Orlando, Florida. Here is your host, Dr. Jay Allen on Safety FM.
This episode of the broadcast and the podcast is brought to you by Safety Focus Moments. They're consultants that want to help you get the safety culture you've been looking for. For more information, go to safetyfocusmoment.com.
Hello and welcome to Safety FM. This is Jay Allen. Well, hopefully you had a fantastic weekend. We are already here Tuesday, of course, Tuesday. Well, you're going to notice that we're kind of copying a theme here, so I want to make reference to it right away. I had the opportunity to go into a lab at the University of Central Florida. And the professor slash doctor that runs lab is David Metcalf. He was showing me the projects that he's working on, which was quite fantastic. And the projects that he has are all kinds of different projects that deal with a whole bunch of different things. But the one that I focused mostly on was the one with autonomous driving. Now, you're also going to notice there's going to be another gentleman inside of here by the name of Glenn Cook. And he is one of the thought leaders when it comes to autonomous driving in the public sector, but more from the standpoint of using it as a ride service. And he is the CEO of Lake Nona Transportation based out of Orlando, Florida. So you're going to hear a little bit of a combination of conversation with David Metcalf, conversation with Glenn Cook. Take a listen to this today. See how it all works out. Tell me if you like it. Also, don't forget, coming up this week, July 31st, our first episode of the Rated R Safety Show. So make sure that you do take a listen to that. And there is a special RSS feed for that particular one. It won't be tied into the standard Safety FM plugin there. And also, just because people had asked, still some spots available for our August the 5th class taking place in Daytona Beach, Florida. So make sure that if you haven't signed up, you do sign up for it. It'll be hosted by Sheldon Primus and myself. So hope to see you there. Enjoy the show.
Now you can hear us around the world, streaming 24/7 at safetyfm.com.
So when you started going down this particular process of the project, because you have a pretty extensive background. I mean, you started off in Texas and now you're here. Mm-hmm. When you were in NASA also. I know you said retirement job, but there has to be more, of course, to it than just that. Why the decision to do this? Besides the retirement piece, of course.
Well, it was a way to stay connected to the latest and greatest innovations. It was a way to kind of give back and let other young people do what I had done really early in life when I was in my 20s to figure out if there are ways to do what's called a spinoff and to take some of the stuff like you saw that we've developed in the lab here at the Mixed Emerging Technology Integration Lab and spin that out into industry and grow jobs, grow applications, and maybe in some cases just change the way things are done, disruptive technology. So that was really one of the main goals of doing this, and kind of the ability to come in and do more than I could do out in the corporate world in terms of social need projects, helping out in Haiti, those emergency cards that you saw, some of the different types of projects we've done for STEM education too. A lot more opportunity to do that and serve the community from an academic post that's research oriented than I could from industry.
But you're still out in the corporate world to some extent too, based on the different businesses that you have.
Yeah, we have a number of spinoffs from the laboratory and also some other companies that I had formed before I even came to the university too. That so I'm a capitalist. They make money, you know, and they make money while I sleep. So those are the best type of companies, right? So
that's the best way to do it.
And then we also have a couple investment firms too, and a couple of nonprofits we do a lot of work with. So I keep busy probably at about the pace of Glenn, you know, an entrepreneurial pace too. So
well, and then let me ask you that particular question if you don't mind.
as you're doing this and you're doing the research side, and then you're also going out into, we'll say, the corporate side of the world and general public, how much of the information that you do inside of the lab ties into what you're doing on the corporate side?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the application, but this is the state of Florida, so we have a lot of conflict of interest regulations too. So there's a lot of things that come out from my students that I never have any commercial or financial interest in whatsoever too, because I don't want it to ever look like I'm doing something other than just helping them too. But then there are other things that are inventions of mine too, that if I go through and do a proper license through our commercialization office too, that they let us take out as faculty and try our hand at seeing if we can make a commercial go of it too. And I've had a number of successes, multi-million-dollar successes out of the lab in that vein as well too.
Anything that we would know offhand as general public or?
There's probably a few things that you may have seen too. We've got there's a company that's spun off called MobileCare, which does all of the tracking of your electronic health records within the government too. So that's one that's been quite successful. I didn't have any commercial interest in that. It was a company called Ology Interactive, and one of our star students, David Rogers, who took that out too. But that's been a multi-million-dollar success too. We have another one called Intercrowd, which you probably haven't heard of, but they're a services company, one of only 20-some-odd services companies for Workday, one of the big enterprise applications too. And that's been a very successful company. In just a few years, they've gone to multi-million dollar success and 150 employees. So that's grown very quickly too. And then a couple of our outside funds have recently been recognized by the governor too. One called Startup Nation Ventures for helping invest in Israel and bringing some of the technology from Israel over here to Florida. The RealView Imaging is an example of that Israeli technology that's being brought over here too. So those are a few of the ones that you may not have heard of. They're not household names yet, but they are things that have kind of made a mark.
So let's ask the question then. Computer graphics, how does this evolve? I mean, you started off going to the University of Austin for computer graphics, and we're here inside of your research lab. That's not the norm. How does this take place?
Early days of computer graphics, I got to work on one of the first Pixar RenderMan systems. University of Texas is one of the first places to have that. And it's an example of having access to some of the earliest technology and figuring out how to use that technology for some social good, some purpose too. I was one of the first people to figure out how to use the Macintosh for computer graphics, and I went to New York, and that's what I taught all up and down Madison Avenue and IBM and GE and Trump and other places too in their organizations how to do that. Even as I was 20 years old, I graduated from college early because I couldn't really afford to stay in college yet.
So, Austin will do that.
Yeah, it was really inexpensive, and I still couldn't afford it. So I empathize with a lot of the students who are here too, who this might be their first generation of college, or they're kind of barely able to afford the very low tuition we have here at UCF too. That was me 30 plus some odd years ago too. But I always wanted to explore the latest technology. So computer graphics led to multimedia. Multimedia led to looking at using this for online education and then for digital health and Internet of Things. So there's been a progression of technologies, and things like autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars have been on that progression. When you look at the Internet of Things and how smart cars are getting and how smart homes are getting, how smart the wearables that you might have on are getting too, that's really the trend that we're on for that. And then how do you connect those? That's where some of the technologies that aren't as glamorous, that you don't see on the front end, like blockchain, right, the back end, to connect all these different technologies together, start to form this whole continuum too. And then making sure that they actually are serving some legitimate purpose for society, especially in the professions, is a lot of what we do here in the Institute for Simulation and Training and in our laboratory in particular.
So with blockchain, I know that it's, we'll say it's a newer technology.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's, the way that the approach goes with how open it is, it will be adaptable?
I do, yeah. Yeah, the platforms that we're seeing now, it's not just for your digital cash, your cryptocurrencies anymore. People are using it from anything as advanced, anything that needs to have trust on the internet. We're such a society that's having trouble with trust across the globe, with fake news and with voter fraud and with all sorts of other type of fraud and abuse within the financial systems too, that this is a way to instill some trust back into the systems. Because you can't trust one organization or one person, surely you can trust a distributed system that everybody kind of checks in and says, yep, that's a legitimate transaction. That's a legitimate transaction. And if you use that for things like health records or people who might doctor their diploma too, you use it for your electronic universal transcript of the future. You can use it for keeping track of land records, keep track of GovTech, who's paid taxes, who hasn't, registration, licenses, your license to be a doctor, so there's not people running around pretending to be doctors. So all sorts of things that have societal impact that you really do want those credentials to be certifiable to. You really do want that.
As you state that, that makes a lot of sense, because I think that there's a lot of that could be used with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I think that it's such an open...
That's what we wrote about, too. Pharmaceutical counterfeiting across the globe is a huge thing. You look like you're taking something that looks like an antacid. Someone's injected antifreeze into it because it was cheaper, and you kill people. People do anything to make a dollar in that market, too. If you have a way of certifying the whole supply chain from start to finish, using blockchain, for instance, those are things that are going to save a lot of lives, too. And it's not a very expensive way to do it. So those are some of the examples of the types of things. There's even a group called DAVE, D-A-V, that's Distributed Autonomous Vehicles, that's looking at how you could keep track of some of the autonomous vehicle data using blockchain.
There's no hints that you're trying to tell us by the name, about the name DAVE, with your name being...
I didn't have anything to do with the original creation of it, too.
Okay,
Distributed Autonomous Vehicles is what I'm pretty sure that it stands for, and it's an operating group, too, across the globe, too. But I've had a chance to meet with some of them and the other company, a blockchain company called Autonomous, that's looking at the connection between the two. So there are some hints even within this space, too, of that technology coming into play to help us.
So let's jump into that. So we have Glenn Cook here, and he's the owner of Lake Nona Transportation. As we have the discussion, what information are you trying to get from his vehicles in particular to go into the research that you're doing?
Yeah, so with our... friends of Tesla at UCF, and also we have the donation of some of the data. We call people that do this data philanthropists. They donate their data for some common good, too. We can see anything from how efficient a fleet is, which might be very beneficial to Glenn's business, to safety, to seeing when people take a braking action or when they take back control from autonomous to regular manual driving mode, too. What conditions are in those areas. We can see all that data, too, and keep track of that. Maybe anonymize it so that you have it across a small fleet of vehicles. That'll give data to not only the manufacturers, but potentially to ride-sharing services or transportation companies like Glenn that could be useful for looking at their operations, their efficiency. It could be useful for looking at tracking, just like Tesla does, the safety data over the course of time, too, to see just how safe self-driving or semi-autonomous vehicle features are when you have autopilot engaged. And those are some of the things that new stats have just come out in the past month, too, that might be of interest to your audience. On that.
Yeah, we'll go over the actual stats here in a moment, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
So right now, Glenn, in regards of the way that your organization is set up, are you mostly doing, we'll say, autonomous vehicles? Is that what the majority of your fleet consists of?
We only utilize Tesla. And we offer all three of the models, which is the S model, the 3 model, as well as the X model.
Now, this is, of course, Lake Nona, just in case if you're not familiar with it. It's in Orlando. As we always know, we're always talking about Orlando, so this is another Orlando plug, so come and visit. So when someone gets into your vehicle, do you give them options in regards of, do you say, hey, do you want to go and see how this thing works, or is it more surprise we're doing it, or how does that work?
No, as soon as we usually pick up a passenger, it's something that's been provided through a sales funnel. Anything that is either through platforms like Limo Anywhere, Get Transferred, GroundLink, Uber, Lyft, it's some type of sales funnel that we receive an actual order. Once the passenger gets in the vehicle, we let them know that they are in a Tesla model. And first thing that usually comes out of their mouth is, wow, does this vehicle have autopilot? And when they start asking the questions, then we tell them, would you like to see it? And then we can actually engage it. The Tesla Model X's and S's actually have a different way of engaging the autonomous feature, the self-driving feature. Once we do that, we're usually on a road with a controlled environment. We try to do it on 528 here, which is a toll road, or 417. Usually in a better controlled environment where your general population vehicles are all heading in the same straight direction. and the different levels of the software that's in a Tesla varies from year model. Anything past a 2016 has all 8 cameras on it, so the hardware is different from a 2016 to a 17. So the software innately is also different of how the actual vehicle operates. When the passenger gets in and they say, yeah, we want to see it, the driver engages the self-driving feature, and the vehicle, just like David said, will either brake, steer, be able to accelerate, decelerate, depending on how they've engaged the cruise control in the vehicle. And now, just recently, Tesla has come out with a software version called 2019 16.2, which actually does navigation on off ramps, will deviate around a vehicle that might be traveling slower than you are to pass them. So it's certain types of features that we're seeing that passengers get excited about. They want to see the safety aspect of it, and it pre-warns you if there's a vehicle approaching you from the rear that you cannot make a lane change, and it also notifies the driver. The vibration in the steering wheel, like David was talking about, is one of those very real things that keeps the driver more alert.
Now, as you look at this, the technology seems like it's advancing more and more. There was a news story that you had shared with me previously that was showing that the car could see as far as in front of the vehicle, if that makes
correct
sense. Are you seeing a lot of adjustments when you're driving where the car will adjust because of the two vehicles ahead of it?
It's always thinking a couple steps ahead, and you can really see and feel the difference. Whenever you would drive a fossil fuel vehicle, you don't generally have that opportunity to feel or see past the vehicle in front of you, especially if it's a large truck. So the reality is the vehicle is smarter than we are. It's a smart vehicle, and I would rather utilize that technology for safety as opposed to being afraid of it. And one of the things that we're finding is it's also a cultural shift for people to even get into a vehicle that has the autonomous self-driving feature. So we'd rather educate and interact with the passenger as opposed to throwing it on them and say, hey, guess what you're doing right now? You know, and it allows them the opportunity to also say, no, I don't want to engage in it right now. But honestly, I'd say less than 2-3% would actually say no. They really want to see it happen.
Now, do a lot of the people that you have inside of your vehicle, or passengers per se, are they booking your cars because they're Teslas? Is that what you're seeing?
Some are. The ones that are prearranged, yes. The ones that are on demand, like the Uber and Lyft platforms, no. Those are just strictly on demand. And we utilize every aspect of the Lyft and the Uber platform just to collect the data. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a black car order. It could be just the regular Uber X or regular rideshare from Lyft. And we do it just to make sure we capture the data.
So for our listeners that might be coming into the Orlando market, if they wanted to actually book a car with you, what would be the best way to go about it?
When they come into the Orlando market, they can basically just call us on our office line, which is 407-558-8051, or they can utilize any of the platforms that we do with GroundLink, as well as Limo Anywhere, and they can request our company, which is Lake Nona Transportation. And that will also give them a chauffeured service to and from any point to point where they might want to go.
Very, very. Now, let's go back for a moment, David, if you don't mind. If we could actually go over some of the stats that we had discussed. You had said that the stats would show something different in regards of human driving opposed to autonomous driving. What are you seeing in regards to that with those particular research?
Yeah, Tesla puts out a vehicle safety report every quarter, too. And they track over the course of time, too. I was really surprised to see some of the latest stats, too. And some of the things that we're seeing compared to, like, NHTSA's safety data is they say that there's one crash every 436,000 miles for just across all vehicles and across all makes and models, too. Tesla, with a manual driver, is one accident every 1.76 million miles during the same time period. And with autopilot engaged, it's one accident every 2.87 million miles. So if you think about the safety record of Tesla, you think about all, and that's just not having a crash. That's not what happens once you do have a crash, you know, which has proven to be higher safety ratings too. That was pretty interesting to me too. So if people actually look at the data, They'll see that the car being vigilant and the driver being vigilant, which is what level two really means of autonomy too. You're still watching the road. You haven't just fallen asleep in the back seat with no driver. You still have someone who's acting as a safety monitor and a manual driver to take over at any instant that the car beeps and alerts you or gives you any type of indicator too. So you almost think about the human and machine working together being better than either one operating by themselves too, is what that kind of shows at this level, at this point in time that we're at too.
Well, based on the stats that you're saying that this vehicle is almost seven times better than a human driving behind the wheel. Now, for the last few years, Volvo had marketed their vehicle as a fatality-proof car. Do you think that they could actually still hold that?
Well, I don't think there's anything, you know, with people still in it, I don't think there's anything. Maybe in a, maybe parked in a garage in a vault or something like that. There's a.
Well,
but I do understand what they're saying.
What they're claiming is that they're making their vehicles for them, for all of their vehicles to be 100% involved into an accident without someone dying.
Yeah.
So right now, based on the information that you stated and also some of the research that I had done prior, if I remember correctly, the Model 3 is supposed to be the safest car that's out there, followed by the Model S, and followed by the Model X. And this almost sounds like I'm plugging Tesla to death here, which is not the case, but if those are the three safest cars, are they basing it solely off of people driving or the brand, or is it being the autonomous vehicle that it is?
Yeah, I think that was based on some of the initial safety ratings for the crash tests that the NHTSA had done, too, was where that moniker, you know, whether it's a marketing moniker or whether it's just looking at the stats, would come from too. The on-road safety for Volvo, they've got a great track record for a long period of time too, a much longer lifespan than Tesla has for data too. So I think there are some things that they can certainly say about their safety record too in there that make a lot of sense too. But say watch out for Tesla from what you're seeing, not only from the NHTSA laboratory test, but also the on-road vehicle safety stats. For the fewest number of crashes and fatalities, too, I'm understanding as well.
So as we move forward, how long do you think we are away from being inside of a vehicle that has no wheel?
Yeah, well, you've already got the low-speed Google cars, that the Waymo cars that don't have a steering wheel that are transporting people, too. So in some ways, it's already here, at least in the Silicon Valley and San Jose area, too. For how long it'll be before people feel really comfortable that they're not going to have a steering wheel too, I still think that there's a consumer sentiment. Having seen this simulator that we have and how people react, I think people are going to need a wheel for quite a while too. Not because of the technology, but because of human nature and the ability to feel somewhat in control of their environment too. The same type of people that don't feel comfortable on a roller coaster, the same type of people that don't feel comfortable when someone else is driving other than them too. There's a lot of people out there that fit that profile, and will rent a car before they'll take a limousine service too, just because they're not as comfortable with someone else driving. Even their own family members sometimes too, you hear about too. And then there's those people that have grown up in an urban environment that aren't comfortable driving too. And a lot of our millennials too, that they don't own a car. They don't even want to own a car. They want to use an Uber or Lyft service or some other service when they need it. And that's all they want to do.
Dr. Metcalf, if people want to know more about your research work, can they find more information about it?
Yeah, we've got a lot of information on what we're doing at metil.org, M-E-T-I-L.org, and that might be one of the best places to find that. And then some of our stuff shows up in UCF News as well, too, for some of the things like our pilot that we have, our co-pilot avatar for the work that we did with Boeing and some of the stuff we've done with the Florida Department of Transportation. And even some of the stuff we did early days with Tesla, when my son and I broke the world record for the longest drive on one charge. Too.
Oh, I forgot to ask that question. It was a 17-hour drive, 423 miles.
Yeah, you got all the stats. Yeah.
I have a source. It doesn't say in the article what the prize was.
So, yeah, there was a number of prizes, too. I think the biggest prize was getting calls and tweets and emails from all the executives, including Elon, to congratulate us on being the first people to ever drive an electric car over 400 miles, a production electric car over 400 miles.
But how did you pull it off? Because if it took 17 hours to do, you had to be driving in a certain mode, a certain style.
Yeah, well, you know, Florida, the first two letters, flat. You know? So, that was the key. A lot of people had tried in California, and it was just too hilly. So we picked a route that was very flat and very low speed. We actually live close enough that there's back roads from where we live out on the coast on Merritt Island to the Florida Everglades. So we went around Lake Okeechobee and down into the Florida Everglades. Those roads are very slow, 25 to 35 miles an hour is what the posted speed limit is. Mm-hmm. So we were going through the Florida Panther Preserve, Shark Alley, some of those areas too, that are very slow and scenic and didn't cause a lot of, wasn't driving 25 miles an hour on the freeway, let's put it that way, to go at the right speed to be able to do that. So it was, you know, low speed driving for a long period of time, but we also tried to pick a very efficient route with very few stoplights and very little traffic and leaving in the middle of the night to a lot of efficiency, inflating the tires just slightly more than the recommended levels and stuff too. So those are all little things that we had learned that we thought from our NASA engineering buddies might help us to be able to do it and to break the record too. Elon gave us a car charger station for use wherever we wanted. We decided to put it here too and have it for testing. And we also got an upgrade to our motor and to our battery pack. And my son got all sorts of signed swag from Elon and signed autographed pictures and stuff like that too. So it was a lot of different things. And then we got invited for years and years. We've been invited to all the major launch events too, as Elon's guests, one of the guests of the company and stuff too. Even some of the ones that have only been a few hundred people at and stuff too. So it's been kind of nice, you know, get to kind of fly out to LA and kind of meet some of the people that my son has always kind of idolized too, that were some of the original, and certainly Elon, but other people like some of the actual engineers and inventors who came up with the battery technology, and Frans van Holsen, who came up with the design of a lot of the cars that you see and, you know, love in the Tesla fleets and stuff too. So that's been very special for our family to be able to get to do that and kind of be honored for that too. So that's probably better than any, you know, monetary awards or other stuff like that too. But
so in the 17-hour drive that you did, was it a constant 17 hours, or was there?
We stopped once. Okay. Needed one bathroom break in there. So
I mean, along the lines of, you didn't stop, like, spend the night somewhere and then continue.
No. Okay. Just started at midnight, went through to the next evening. So yeah, so it was a long day, endurance driving. So.
So are you in the Guinness World Records?
No, we're in the World Record Academy. The Guinness Book of World Records had some other demands that didn't, like, they wanted on a closed circuit track that was measured out rather than having a company measure it. Elon's grand challenge demanded it be on public roadways. So I had to choose which of the two. We did register with Guinness, and then because we registered with Guinness, it's in the World Record Academy books. So that's, you know, there's a couple of different world record groups
I'll take it.
Yeah, it's out there. You can go look it up and stuff too. So we held the world record until a guy named Bjørn Nyland broke it a few years later in a 90 instead of 85 kilowatt battery pack.
And how many miles did he make it?
Oh, I think he went over 500. I think the current is he's at over 550 because he set a record and then broke it again. So you'd have to look it up and see exactly, but I think that's what his current one is.
So my questions, were the air conditioner on, or did you have the windows down, or neither?
It was December, so we actually had the windows cracked just slightly for part of it. Part of it, we didn't even need the windows cracked, too. In the evening, it was probably in the 50s, you know, Florida freezing, they call it. But it probably didn't get up to about 70, so we were quite comfortable. We had some little electric fans that weren't touched to the media entertainment or the AC system. I had turned all that stuff off too, just to make it as efficient as possible as well too. So every little bit might have counted too. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, Dr. Metcalf and Glenn, I appreciate you both being on Safety FM.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
SafetyFM.com. Wow, how things can change from one week to the next. Hey, hope everybody out there is staying healthy. I know everything is super crazy. We feel disoriented by the COVID-19 virus. It's more important than ever to stay connected and check in with your loved ones. That's why I'm so happy I've got T-Mobile. Listen, T-Mobile isn't just talking the talk. They're taking measures right now to make life easier for everyone by doing the right thing for their customers during this really critical time. For example, T-Mobile has ensured all current customers with data plans have access to unlimited smartphone data on their network for 2 months. We're all in this together. T-Mobile truly believes that. And while many T-Mobile stores are temporarily closed to help keep customers and employees healthy, they've still got you covered with any help you need. Just check out T-Mobile.com. You can see what stores are still open and how you can manage your account online. Stay safe out there. During congestion, customers using more than 50 gigs a month may notice reduced speeds prioritization, video typically at 480p, capable device required.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.